The Dirty Gubbins, I tell those guys all the time, they're in a time warp, because those guys sound like it's 1974, and they are jamming. I mean, those guys belong on Capricorn Records, CeeLo, as I welcome you to the chow.
Yeah, I'm stuck, Tony, in the mid-70s and the 80s, same as you are. So if it wasn't recorded circa 74 to maybe 90 or 89, I don't listen to it.
CeeLo, I'll tell you right now, I listened to the other day a great R.E.M. record from 83, one of the great R.E.M. records of all time called Reckoning. And it's so net from side A to side B, brother. And it was on vinyl. I listened to vinyl. It was absolutely out. Music on vinyl, for those of you who haven't done it, we've bought the lie. Digital technology, you've bought the lie. It sounds so warm. It sounds so real. It sounds so earthy. It is just where it's at. But let's bring Chris Lowe in, because it's like this. You can look at something through glasses, or you can look at it through laser vision correction, and the difference is night and day. The difference is CD to vinyl. Vinyl is the real thing. Laser vision correction is the real thing from the Campbell Cunningham Laser Center, as I bring Chris Lowe in and we give SEC in focus. Before we do the SEC in focus, CeeLo, I would like your two favorite heels from the early 80s in wrestling. Two favorite heels.
Greg Valentine's got to be right up there. I mean, you know, even before his WWE fame, he was the Hammer. I mean, nobody was better than Hammer. I think Ole Anderson too. I think those two, old school, no really flash and dash to the just old school bruisers, man. I was a big Ole Anderson, Greg the Hammer Valentine guy. And again, Greg the Hammer before, you know, his WWE days.
You know what I love about those guys back in the day? And the Hammer had that look about him. Where you just
still does.
Him.
Have you seen him lately?
Does. Oh, he's beautiful. He's aged so well because he's so ugly now. I'll say this to you, CeeLo. I'll say this to you about both those guys. They both have what I call great old-school wrestler physiques in that they're not the most muscle-bound guys in the world. They don't look like these juiced-up dudes that you see today, but they look like two guys that if you got in a fight and you were in a bar room, smoky bar room, those are two guys you want on your side because those guys are throwing dudes through windows. That's both
they're two
guys.
They're strong. Two guys that really do look like they'll beat your butt. I mean, in any capacity, a barroom fight, if you're out in some parking lot, you know, you just wouldn't want to mess with them. The thing too about both of them is that's back in the day, Tony, as you know, when typically just about in every town, every venue, they're wrestling for 40, 45, 35 minutes each match. I mean, they're grueling, long matches. You know, they're going at it, driving all over the place, and two tough amigos for sure.
Chris, let's talk here. Developments in the SEC. First of all, I want your thoughts. Why, what in the world... How in the world can Graciano look those people at Rutgers in the face and take a job 5 days before signing day? Would that NFL job not be there, Chris, next Thursday? I mean, are you kidding me?
Tony, I thought the same thing. That was the first thing that hit me. You talk about really leaving a school high and dry. Anybody who would do that. And I can't imagine that the NFL, whoever it is, if they really wanted a guy at this point, and then they decided that, listen, this is my guy, you know, get him... A couple days after. Of course, I guess the flip side of that, Tony, too, is if you're Greg Schiano and you know that you may be leaving a week after signing day or 3 days or 4 days after signing day, can you look at these kids and these parents with a straight face when you're signing them all and they're all writing their names on that dotted line on National Signing Day and tell them you're going to be their football coach when you know you're not? I mean, I don't know which way is worse. I don't know which way to do it would be worse because I guess there is no easy way.
No, there is no easy way, but the NFL and college football ought to have some kind of understanding. I mean, this is the NFL's farm system. The NFL doesn't fund their own farm system.
It goes back to the deal, Tony. We've talked about it 100 times on your show. It's not fair that coaches can come and go as they please. And then if a kid comes to a school – and he doesn't like it. He's there for a year, half a year. He doesn't fit. socially he doesn't adjust. He doesn't like his position coach. He doesn't like his head coach. He's not getting a play, or he's not being used the way he wanted to. Then he's at the school's mercy. I mean, we've seen it here in Tennessee with Dooley and players coming and going. Some guys, you know, been able to transfer where they wanted to go. Other guys, you sort of held their feet to the fire. And I just use Tennessee as an example. It happens at all the schools. The system stinks in that coaches can come and go as they want to go. Now, granted, there's going to be some buyouts sometimes financially that would prevent them maybe from doing so freely. But kids have, there's no recourse. I mean, if you take Rutgers, for instance. If a kid signs with Rutgers and Shiano goes to the Bucks, and maybe he signed because he's, you know, I know they say you sign because of the school, but that's not the way it works most of the time. He's, you know, he really likes Shiano. He developed a relationship with Shiano. Shiano's promised him, this is the way we're going to use you in our offense. And then Rutgers brings in a coach who runs, you know, a pro style or a spread. It completely goes against what this kid can do. You know, where's the kid then? You know, he's screwed. The system stinks.
There's no doubt. See, let's talk about the league for a second. I'm looking at the rankings right now, and I was laughing at this guy down at Vanderbilt before. You know, I'm kind of not laughing right now, and I don't know. I've never seen Vanderbilt hovering around the top 25 in recruiting rankings ever. CeeLo, is this guy a long-termer at Vanderbilt, or is he a one-more-year guy and he's going to get out of here?
He's a salesman. He and I mean that in a good way, a complimentary way. He can talk the talk, and kids relate to him. He knows how to get in and, you know, and get through to kids and press the right buttons with kids, and that's so much of what recruiting and coaching is all about, especially in this day and age. And James is, I've talked to him a number of times, and he's one of those guys that, again, and not to overuse the cliche, but he can talk the talk. So I don't know. I think he, in his mind, I think he's committed to building something there at Vanderbilt and doing things they've never done. You know, they won 6 games this year, still had a losing season. I know that's disappointing. I know that's a bitter taste in his mouth that they didn't finish that thing out and have a winning season. You know, I have said whether it's Vanderbilt or Tennessee or Alabama, whoever, you can't evaluate signing classes on signing day. I know we all like to do it, and people make a lot of money doing that, you know, class rankings or kids are ranked, but you just can't do it. There's too many examples that go against where teams are ranked on signing day. That said, I think Vanderbilt, under his tutelage, has been involved with kids that typically they weren't in the past. I'm talking about they're fighting, you know, big-time schools, and in some cases winning some of those battles. And I think that's the difference with him right now, is he's getting in the battle. He's in the fray with some kids in the past that Vanderbilt never would have been in the fray with.
You know, see, look around the league right now. What is it about Saban? What is it about this guy? You know, we see him as sort of a crusty dude, but then these kids say that he's the greatest recruiter in the world behind closed doors. What am I missing?
Well, he is a different guy. I've had a chance to sit out with Nick on a number of occasions, just the two of us. He is not the same guy you see typically at those press conferences where he's trying to set up some poor sap in the media. You know, he's like a tiger waiting to pounce on his prey. He wants to send his message. He wants to send his message to his players, to the fans, and he's waiting for somebody in the media to ask just the right question so he can pounce on him. And a lot of that's set up, but no, he's got a much better sense of humor than he's given credit for. Very smart guy. He does his homework. And here's the thing about Saban and recruiting, Tony. It's not just Saban, all right? He has built this entire recruiting operation at Alabama. There are more guys and gals there at Alabama who are somehow tied in to their recruiting operation. I mean, you walk through that office and you see all these different people, and I bet you every second person you see has something to do with recruiting. I mean, they don't leave any stone unturned. They know everything about the kids. He's very good. Nick is very good at evals. He knows pretty quickly, after having talked to a kid, having seen tape on a kid, having talked to people about a kid, whether he thinks they're going to fit in his system. Some guys, you know, he passes on that others think are great football players. And I think that goes back to maybe his NFL days, his NFL experience. He's just very, very good at evaluations. And I mean not only physically, but socially, from a maturity standpoint, where those guys are going to fit in. Because here's the thing about Alabama's recruiting. Everybody misses, okay? Everybody misses sometimes. But you go back to his last few classes at Alabama, he hadn't had a whole lot of misses. I mean, when they've gone and got guys and brought him in, and they were supposed to be good, they were good. You know, so it's R&D, and that's his thing, and I'm stealing it from him. You hear him talk about it's R&D, which is recruit and develop. They not only recruit great players, Tony, they develop them.
See, right now, when you're looking at those recruiting rankings and what they've done, and I know you don't get involved in it, but signing day is coming up on Wednesday. Outside of Vanderbilt, what's the biggest surprise to you right now in terms of who's doing what?
I think Tennessee's done a nice job considering all their turnover on the coaching staff, the fact that they stunk it up this season. You know, you lose to Kentucky, there's all this gnashing of the teeth, everybody's wondering if Dooley's going to make it, you know, how much longer he's got. He loses six coaches on his staff. And I think to sort of battle through all that the way he has and the remaining coaches on the staff, I think it's a credit to what they've done. Now, again, I'm not saying this class, you know, you've seen it ranked anywhere from 12 to 20. The proof will be in the pudding. We'll see 2-3 years from now how good this class is. And I remind my friends and all the Tennessee fans of this. You know, two of their most highly rated classes, Tony, over the last 5 years were Fulmer's next-to-last class in 07 and Kiffin's class in 09. I think both those classes, I think Kiffin's class was rated like 9th or 10th in 09. And I think Fulmer's next-to-last class was ranked anywhere between 2nd and 4th. Those two classes, as it turned out, were awful. I mean, because players didn't pan out, players got in trouble, you know, they're robbing convenience stores, they're smoking dope, they're getting arrested, whatever, you know, or they just couldn't play, and then you have all that attrition, and they're gone. And you look at the key gets in some of those classes, you know, Nukeith Richardson, Jansen Jackson, Bryce Brown, those were sort of the three big gets in 2009. Well, what did Tennessee get out of those kids on the field?
It's incredible. What college football get out of those kids on the field? Nukeith Richardson is retired. Jansen Jackson's made himself eligible for the NBA draft, NFL draft after a year at McNeese State. And Bryce Brown, if memory serves, I don't think he's played a down a meaningful
he
football
He may go down.
Period.
Bryce Brown may go down
yep.
as the most overrated recruit in the history of football.
No question.
Has he played? Has he carried the football
played.
At the college level?
I don't know.
Besides the first, you know, since his freshman year at Tennessee where he was just okay. But since then, he hasn't carried the ball, right?
No. And you know what? If he goes to the combine and he shows out, somebody in the NFL will take a
absolutely.
Shot at him because
Somebody
he's
take
healthy.
A shot at him. Somebody will take a shot at him. And again, I maintain that, you know, that he was a guy, he was a typical creation of recruiting in that he was a good player, and you certainly could see when you watched him on tape that he had ability, but he was playing in Kansas, okay? He wasn't playing in South Florida. You know, he wasn't playing in Georgia. He wasn't playing out in California. He was playing in Kansas, and I think there's a difference, and we saw that. You know, once you saw him play against SEC competition, you sort of thought, well, you know, there's a lot of Bryce Browns in the SEC. There's a lot of Bryce Browns across the college football landscape. But, again, I just would use those two classes as examples. But to get back to your question, I think Tennessee's class and the what they've been able to do, get some big guys up front in their defensive line. I know there's two or three here that they want to close with, a couple receivers in particular. But I still think the way he's gone out and been able to battle, win some battles with big-time schools and get some of the kids that they feel like they had to have position needs, they've done an excellent job considering the circumstances, and we'll see how it all pans out.
AC, appreciate your time, man. We're going to develop this stuff as we go and talk about some of the different teams looking forward to the spring and break some schedules down. I know you're always in the process of doing that, but I do appreciate your time today. Have a Doc Gooden. Great talking with you, Chris Lowe.
Same here, Tony. You guys have a great day.
All right, brother.